Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the very first day of July 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will drop by with an update of the weather forecast for us. Along the way, the state statisticians from Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa will talk a little bit about their regions and what crop conditions might look like. And we'll hear all about beekeeping as we make our way through this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or follow us on Twitter. My handle is @CommodityWeek. Or you can look for Dave Dickey at David A. Dickey.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they're trading in Chicago at the end of the day, with the settlement prices down a nickel in the nearby July contract at 559 and three quarters for the soft red winter wheat. July corn today, 422 and three quarters, down a penny and a half, and September at 416, two and three quarters lower. December corn at 422 and three quarters, 2.5 cents lower, and the March contract at 434 and a quarter, down two. The May futures there down 2 cents. A settlement price at 441 and one half. July soybeans, $14 even, down a half cent. The August down two at 1327 and three quarters. And November beans at $11.47 and a half, down 9 3/4 for the day. January futures, $11.55 and a half, 8.5 cents lower. And next May's at $11.69 and three quarters, down 6 cents for the day. Bean meal at $4.56.10, that's down 2.20. Bean oil at $38.87, 2 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the August contract, a trade at $151.57 and a half, up $1.50. October at $155 and 2.5 cents per 100 pounds, $1.90 higher. And the live cattle, August feeder cattle, at $215, 77.5 cents, up the $3 limit. September futures at $216.85, up $2.85 on the end of the day. July lean hogs at $130.97.5, that's $1.67.5 higher. And the August contract at $130.45. down $2.37.5. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. August crude oil futures at $105.35 a barrel are down 2 cents. September futures at $104.73 unchanged. The RBOB gasoline at $3.03 3/10 cents, down 9 cents of a cent. The ethanol futures at $2.08 7/10 cents a gallon. That's 3 7/10 cents lower. And the spread between the wholesale price of gasoline and ethanol is now $1.1 10 cents wide. That's 9 10 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.45 6/10, just about 5 10 cents lower. And diesel fuel at $2.97 8/10, that's up 3 10 cents. Gold futures settled $4.60 higher at $1,326.60. And the U.S. dollar at 78.81. is up 0.04 on the afternoon. The weather forecast looks like this as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Partly sunny skies, a high of 85 degrees on a west wind at about 16 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 24. And then tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 61. Again, the winds from the west at 8 to 10 miles an hour this evening. Tomorrow, beautiful day. However, there will be a 20% chance of showers. Partly sunny otherwise, a high of just 72 degrees on a west-northwest wind at 8 to 11. And Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of 55 degrees. On Thursday, sunny skies and 74. Again, that north-northwest wind at about 8 miles an hour. And Thursday evening, mostly clear and 56. By the time we get to Friday, Independence Day, July the 4th, sunny skies and 77. And for fireworks, mostly clear skies in the Urbana-Champaign area, 59 degrees. It will be a beautiful Friday night. Saturday, sunny skies in 80. Saturday night, a chance of showers and some thunderstorms, partly cloudy and 63. And then on Sunday, showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, otherwise a high near 81 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 66.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is a Tuesday afternoon. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk just a bit about what happened in the marketplace today. It appears that the soybeans came back and finished, well, while with a loss, fairly strong for the day.
They actually bounced back extremely well. The July beans actually only down about a half a cent here. You know, as we looked at the November beans, you know, we were low at 32, but closed 46 and a half. You know, that's, you know, 14 or 12 cents off slow. So, you know, just a very good close as far as things went. And there was a lot of beans sold here today. I mean, as we look here, looked like about 7,500 contracts of beans being sold by the funds earlier in the day, along with 8,500 in the corn pit. So, you know, it wasn't like we come in here and there wasn't much activity on the downside, at least from the sell side anyhow. So maybe this three-day weekend coming up, and, you know, we generally see a change in weather or trends in the weather pattern over a three-day weekend around the 4th of July. So, you know, is that something they're thinking about? And you know, it can happen, but I mean, all in all, the numbers yesterday were pretty devastating.
It would have to look out and see dry weather for a long time, I would think. But it does happen from time to time over the July 4th weekend that the marketplace changes its mind. What does the long-term forecast show you? Have you talked to anybody?
You know, I mean, that's the problem, that basically the next 2 weeks don't look like any problem. They look like a little warmer and drier for a little spell here, but that's exactly what they need, especially up north, you know, where they, in Iowa and across Iowa and Wisconsin and in that area up in there, just sort of been inundated with the rain as of late, and they'd be sort of happy to see a week without much rain.
When you talked with your producers today as they called in, and I suspect they did, and they wanted to know, as you told me earlier this morning, about some crop insurance, that would be related to weather and some problems they had in the field. And was that green snap or hail? Was it wind damage or hail?
Okay, here in Indiana, most of it was green snap and wind damage, and up in LaSalle and DeKalb County, Illinois, why, that was hail up along with the winds up there, along with the tornado that touched down around Earlville. In that way. So along Route 34 up through there, there's quite a bit of damage in down corn and down trees.
I think I saw some really flat corn on the Twitter feed from someplace between Earlville and Mendota in that northern part of Illinois and that Ottawa, LaSalle, Peru sort of area. So it was kind of a rough area. How bad was the damage, do you suppose?
Well, I know that in Earlville that the state police were blocking off roads into the downtown itself unless you show them your driver's license and you lived in the city. So I think the one side of town got hit fairly hard with the tornado. I do know that it was down corn. I've reported, you know, at least five or six
Wayne, are you still with me?
We've turned all that in here, too. So we're getting calls from them saying that things weren't very happy.
No, I understand. So turn your attention back to the marketplace for me just a bit. One of the things on the demand side of the market that might give you pause, at least for the corn, that it could find a nearer term bottom, especially if the July 4th weekend were to change. I know weather would be one of them. Livestock demand didn't appear that it was out of the grain stocks numbers, at least, to be stronger than had than was expected. The EIA numbers, however, for ethanol had been strong. Do those remain strong or not?
You know, I think that we're going to continue to see good ethanol usage along the way here. The one thing that can pull that back a little bit for the profits for the processors, the DDGs aren't selling there as well. But, I mean, we have had some pretty strong usage in the corn and good export numbers and kept going along. And, you know, cheaper prices a lot of times can stir up a little demand. So, you know, we're hoping that that might happen in the corn market too here. But, you know, we just found out we don't have extremely tight conditions. But I'll tell you what, farmers aren't going to be very big sellers right in these levels here now. I think the bin doors are going to be shut. So we're going to, you know, have to bring things back into process to look and see if we can't get the farmers to continue to move some grain.
Well, the bin drawers will be shut, and that does mean that eventually they'll have to bid up in order to get those opened up. There is a catch-22, of course, that you might keep it long enough where you're forced to have to push it out the door in order to make room for the new crop, and that becomes a problem for producers. Do you have any thoughts on what the timings of their sales for old crop corn might be?
Well, you know, hopefully that they've got some sales on. But if you're sitting there and you don't have hardly any sales on, stubborn holder for a little while here maybe, but don't get too stubborn, because as we get towards the end of July, a lot of corn's going to be flowing into the system from the southern states. You know, they're already pollinating down there, and it isn't going to come to us too much here that way. So, somebody said the 11th commandment, I think, was it on a thing about don't keep bull crop corn much after the 1st of July.
Yep.
And, it's seeming to come true this year.
Hey, thanks so much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 5% of the corn crop is now silking around the nation. The rolling five-year average is 9% for this week. 55% of the crop is in good condition, 20% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 56 and 18% respectively. Soybeans are emerged at the rate of 94%. That compares with 94% on the rolling five-year average. And 10% of the crop is now blooming, and that, too, is on par with the 10% for the rolling five-year average. This week, 57% of the soybean crop is in good condition and 15% in excellent. Last week, it was 58 and 14. Now, here are the state statisticians from Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Katie Andel, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending June 29, 2014. Periodic precipitation continued to slow fieldwork in Iowa during the 2.2 days suitable for fieldwork. Iowa experienced extreme temperatures this week with a high of 89 degrees at Donelson on Friday and a low of 55 degrees at Sac City on Tuesday and Atlantic on Wednesday. Temperatures for the week averaged 0.6 degrees above normal. Rain fell across most of the state in three events. The heaviest amount of rain fell Thursday through Friday in central Iowa. Total rain for the week varied from 0.17 inches at Lester to 7.6 inches at Maxwell. Average precipitation for the week was 2.22 inches, nearly double the normal amount, increasing 1 and 3 percentage points from last week. Topsoil and subsoil moisture levels rated 97 and 90% adequate to surplus, respectively. There were isolated reports of corn silking in Iowa, and 79% of the corn crop was rated in good to excellent condition. 6% of the soybean acreage was blooming by the end of the week, 10 days ahead of the previous year but 2 days behind normal. 75% of the soybean crop was rated in good to excellent condition. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Illinois had another week with above normal precipitation. Northern areas were slightly below normal rainfall, but central and southern areas were above normal. Overall, the state averaged 1.48 inches of rain, more than 1/2 inch above normal. Temperatures were 1.5 degrees above normal. The wet weather has made it difficult for some farmers to bale hay, harvest wheat, and plant double crop soybeans. The corn crop has begun to pollinate, and 4% of acres are now silking. That compares to 1% 1 year ago and 14% for the five-year average. The condition of the corn crop is rated as 3% in very poor to poor condition, 17% fair, and 80% in good to excellent condition. 9% of soybean acres are blooming. That compares to 2% 1 year ago and 7% normally. The condition of the crop is rated as 4% in very poor to poor condition, 22% fair, and 74% in good to excellent condition. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Glenn Goodrich with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending June 29, 2014. Farmers got more of the same this week as warm and wet weather continued to make fields difficult to work, and hay a challenge to dry, especially in the north of the state. Average temperatures in the state range from 71 to 80 degrees, or 1 to 8 degrees above normal. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.25 to 3.55 inches, with a statewide average of 1.47 inches. Despite heavy downpours on Monday, a great many farmers still took to the fields this week out of necessity, spraying and side-dressing their fields and cutting their hay as well as they could. Corn has just begun to silk, sitting at 2% versus 0% last year and 8% five-year average. Soybean emergence was concluding at 96% versus 95% last year and 93% five-year average. Soybeans blooming was getting going at 15% versus 0% last year and 8% five-year average. Winter wheat was finishing coloring at 93% and was over halfway matured at 59%. Winter wheat harvested was 28% concluded statewide versus last year's 24% and 44% five-year average. Winter wheat harvested regionally was 64% in the south, only 9% in central, and still sitting at 0% for north region. Conditions were excellent for the growth of all crops this week, although rains in counties hit hardest by storms have knocked down a small part of the wheat crop. Weeds were growing vigorously as well in many places, taking advantage of delays in herbicide application across the state. Head blight in wheat has also been reported in southern counties, leading some farmers to prep for fungicide application. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending June 29, 2014. This is Glenn Goodrich reporting.
Our thanks to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. Now, up next, you know, beekeeping is enjoying a comeback in many U.S. states, including Illinois. Renewed interest in the hobby is linked to some concerns over declining bee populations. Enthusiasts also say curiosity tends to attract people. No matter the case, those with experience say, while rewarding, it's not an activity you can just buzz into. Illinois Public Radio's Mike Moen has more.
The midday sun is beating down on a rural estate near Genoa. It's a humid day with temperatures in the 80s. Even though putting on extra layers of clothing doesn't sound too appealing, Carolyn Huden doesn't seem to mind.
Slip this over your head and then zip up the front.
Both of us are now sporting tan jackets that feature the famous-looking veil designed to protect the human head from a swarm of bees. Now that we're ready, Huden leads me to the 35 hives she and her partner Frank Rice have in a field outside their home. She lifts the top off one of them to see how things are coming along. Huden says this is one of the weaker hives, but she likes what she sees.
There's a lot of eggs. This tells me that the queen is doing her job. And eventually they'll grow to full potential.
Huden and Rice are among the more than 2,500 registered beekeepers in Illinois. In a newly released report, state officials say that number has increased every year since 2002. They credit some of that to heightened awareness of colony collapse disorder, which has wiped out scores of bee colonies in the U.S. Agriculture officials say when you exclude the impact from the recent winter, Illinois' bee population hasn't suffered some of the heavy losses seen in other states, but they say it's still good to have all of this renewed interest. Pollination from these insects is important for fruit and vegetable crops, especially Illinois' pumpkin supply, which is the largest in the country. And as these new beekeepers hit the scene, people like Huden welcome them with open arms. But they suggest going into observation mode first.
When you see it, it sounds like a great idea until you get all the way into it and then you say, why did I do this?
Huden says while the work is seasonal, there is some heavy lifting in hot weather. You have to be patient and willing to spend a few extra bucks. That's because initially, beekeeping isn't exactly cheap. There's the cost of all the equipment, not to mention the bees you have to purchase. When you add it all up, some experts say the average initial investment can run between $500 and $1,000. Oh, and there's the ability to withstand the occasional sting and other frustrations.
The honey will spill all over you no matter what you do. You will get it on you, all over you, and everything sticks together.
And some research is required, including how to care for your bees during the winter and whether your community has restrictions on keeping hives. At a recent meeting of the Fox Valley Beekeepers Association, newcomer Shantasy Johnston of Batavia reflected on some of her growing pains.
I did it my first year without taking any classes and just kind of researching stuff on my own, and it didn't work out. I lost my first hive.
Undeterred by the false start, Johnston took a beginner's class. Did it pay off?
So far, it's been a good year. We'll see what happens if I get any honey.
So why do experienced beekeepers preach a heavy dose of education before getting started? Longtime instructor Chuck Lawrence says they want people to remain passionate about what they're doing not just give up after a few early obstacles.
The challenge is that, you know, well, how long will this last and how long will they keep it up? Because sometimes these people get a few stings and they're out of the business.
Lauren says they want to keep enough people interested before the novelty wears off again, and they don't want valuable resources taken away from people who are willing to stick it out. At the same time, these pros don't want to scare anyone off because they say there are so many good things that come from taking up beekeeping as a hobby. They say you will later recoup a lot of the money spent up front by selling the honey you start to collect over time. There's the positive impact on agriculture, and there's the ultimate reward of feeding the curious mind by learning so much about what these insects are able to do. I'm Mike Moen.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or follow us on Twitter. My handle is at Commodity Week. Or you can follow Dave at David A. Dickey. We know the nation's renewable fuel standard is under attack again, this time by the Congressional Budget Office. The CBO claims repealing the RFS would reduce gas prices, but that's assuming no blender gas pumps are installed to expand the so-called blend wall and pump higher blends of ethanol. The National Farmers Union's Chandler Gould.
They're not looking at the benefits if we built the infrastructure out and continued to add blender pumps and continued to increase demand by producing more flex fuel vehicles, which makes more competition. The consumer, it's a win-win-win. They took a very static picture of today's point in time and then took a very narrow slice of what the RFS is actually doing.
A slice that leaves no room for expanding the nation's fuel pump infrastructure.
National Farmers Union supported adding blender pumps to the REAP program. The oil industry fought heavily against that, you know, which would allow not only the consumer to choose what blend of ethanol they wanted to put in there, but, you know, as you can tell from even here, by using E85 from their own report, that you would end up saving approximately about 61 cents a gallon.
Other studies have shown even greater savings for the basic 10% ethanol blend used in most of the nation's automotive fuel.
We've also got multiple studies out there, not only the ones from the USDA, but from other academic sources, showing that the RFS is not affecting fuel price, but yet the price of oil is.
Gould of the NFU says even more upsetting to agriculture, at least to his organization and ethanol producers, is that a supposedly nonpartisan arm of Congress is siding with the petroleum industry. NFU wants CBO to withdraw the study and take a second look at ethanol's benefits for motorists and rural America. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll take a look at the weather forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Ginger Snap Day. The cookie likely dates back to medieval times. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Edward Jenner of Berkeley, England, conducted his first experiment with smallpox inoculation, showing that the cowpox virus provides immunity to smallpox. By the way, cowpox gets its name from cow maids touching the udders of infected cows. In 1860, Charles Goodyear died. He invented the process named vulcanization, which made the commercial use of rubber possible. Vulcanized rubber did not become brittle in winter, nor turn gummy in summer as natural rubber did, But Goodyear never profited by his invention. In 1901, the U.S. National Bureau of Standards was created. Its duties included testing and calibration of measuring scales. In 1910, Ward Baking Company of Chicago, Illinois, opened the first completely automated bread plant in the U.S. The dough and bread remained untouched by human hands until it exited the machine already wrapped. And in 1953, Cheese Whiz was introduced nationwide by Kraft. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Time to check the weather forecast. Don Day is out of the office this afternoon. No worries. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated left us this update.
Most of the Midwest today is expecting to see a drying tendency to occur after the storms of last night occurred significantly from northeastern Nebraska through the middle of four-fifths of Iowa into portions of Illinois. The precipitation diminished as it moved further to the east in Indiana and Michigan and parts of Ohio. But we did see showers and thunderstorms in many of those areas, and that may be the last of it for a little while. We are expecting to see a drier tendency occur, and it's also going to trend a little bit cooler across the Midwest as well. We'll continue to monitor this rather closely, but there's no reason for great concern here. Actually, we will conserve soil moisture for a while here, and we'll also expect crop development maybe to slow down just a tad bit. It'll give the crops a chance to rest a little while. If you recall, temperatures here recently have stayed above 70 degrees at night for a little while, so this cool off coming up will really give the crop a nice little amount of rest before we start going back into some more warmer weather. The temperatures will cool to the upper 50s and 60s in the uppermost Midwest here today. This will include the eastern Dakotas and parts of Minnesota. The rest of the Midwest will still be relatively warm, a lot of 70 and 80 degree temperatures expected, but as we move on forward into the day tomorrow and on into Thursday, we'll see some of that cooler air expand across the heart of the Midwest. High temperatures tomorrow will be in the 60s and 70s across the northern two-thirds of the region, while a few 80s occur still in the far southernmost and extreme easternmost parts of the region. We'll expect all the temperatures in the Midwest on Thursday to be mostly running in the 70s across the region, and a strong warming trend will begin to occur after that, and it'll start off in the plains and become rather significant in some areas. From Texas to Montana, we'll see temperatures getting up into the upper 80s and 90s by the weekend, and temperatures over 100 degrees will be possible once again out that way. The Midwest will probably not get quite so warm, but they will see a warmer tendency. We'll expect most of the region to encounter temperatures back into the 80s and lower 90s as we get into the weekend coming up. Some areas in the west will warm quicker than that, and we will see some temperatures in the middle 90s possible near and west Missouri River, and we'll expect that to occur again as we get into the weekend. Now, the heat is not going to be able to get much more expansive than that, simply because of all the moisture that's in the ground and on the ground in the western Corn Belt and plains. There's going to be a tremendous amount of feedback and moisture into the atmosphere as we heat it up, and that's going to destabilize the atmosphere and make a little bit of shower activity occur across portions of the region as we get into this warmer period coming up. Now, most of the showers that pop up will be brief and light, and they'll probably be focused more on the western Corn Belt and the Great Plains than in the eastern Midwest. Today's forecast continues to suggest that the southwestern Corn Belt has the highest potential for drying down over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, along with maybe a small part of the northern U.S. Delta. Keep in mind that these areas are saturated today. Wet enough that certainly a week to 10 days of drying might actually be beneficial for some of the region. And we're not in any kind of a mood here to be concerned about the drying tendency, at least not in the first half of July. Timely rain will be important in the second half of the month. Most of the forecast model data suggests that we will still see some timely rain, although it may still be a little lighter than usual in the southwest.
Our thanks to Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City for his update of the growing region's weather forecast. That wraps up the closing market report. I'm Todd Gleason.